We're on the air all over the internet and worldwide. This is Radio Entrepreneurs. My name is Jeffrey Davis, and we are today and all week airing from O'Brien and Levine Court Reporting Services, and it is called On the Record, this show. And I'm flanked to my left by Mark Z from Mark Z Legal Staffing.
Jeff, great to be with you. Just such stimulating subjects and the best of the best attorneys we have on the show.
Biggest legal groupie I know. It's unbelievable. And I mean it nicely. I mean, he just loves lawyers. He's a lawyer, loves lawyers.
Well, that's a first.
Someone's got to love
Somebody's
you guys.
Somebody's got to love us, yeah.
And that lovable voice on the other end was Steve Bazarian from Dalton and Feingold, and I heard you have a very interesting part of your practice in airborne illnesses.
I do. One of the parts of my practice.
You're not representing the illnesses, right?
No. I represent. I'm on the defense side.
Okay.
One of the pieces of my practice, I do a lot of tort defense, but one of the pieces of my practice is of what's called foodborne illness cases. And the cases I have primarily worked on have involved E. coli infections.
Interesting.
The first time I went down this road, it was raw milk, something called raw milk, which is unpasteurized milk. And the client that I was representing at the time, there are some states where you can't sell unpasteurized milk.
Really?
Yeah. I represent...
Not in France.
Exactly. In Europe, they have it too. You can sell it in Connecticut, and my client had stores in Connecticut, and they had several illnesses as a result of people drinking raw milk and getting E. coli infections. It's called raw milk because it's not pasteurized. Pasteurization takes out a lot of the...
Boils it.
Right, exactly. But there are a lot of people out there who think that if the pasteurization process removes a lot of the positive aspects of milk, and so they don't like...
Taste.
Right. Well, that's one thing. Correct, is taste.
I lived on a dairy farm when I was 13 years old.
Oh, gosh, you know more than I do. So it's nutrients and all that sort of stuff. But the other problem is if it's not pasteurized and there's a potential for an E. coli infection, then that could be passed on through the raw milk.
Right.
And the problem with E. coli is it results in, if you get a serious enough infection, it can result in kidney failure. And that's where the cases... That's where the rubber hits the road on these cases. And they usually involve a form of kidney failure. And usually the plaintiff is required to undergo certain procedures called hemodialysis and a number of other procedures to help his kidneys function. And it could conceivably lead to death. It very, very, very rarely does. But it can conceivably lead to death.
Now, do you work with your clients in terms of being proactive for solutions, do you have to be more reactive? So, for example, like with Chipotle, when they had issues with their food and what it led to, and I think it really, they lost, you know, multi-millions of dollars.
I am not able in that space for my clients to be as proactive as I can. The departments at the clients that I have where E. coli is an issue are frankly way more proactive than I could ever be, and they are way ahead of the curve on it. I have been proactive in other areas for other tort work that I've done for clients.
Right.
I've done seminars on, like, for premises liability, how to tee up and protect yourself when you do get sued, and how to, you know, what it's like to go through a lawsuit and what you can do to help me and that sort of thing. But in the foodborne illness sphere, as a non-scientist, I don't have that ability, that proactive capability. And frankly, my clients are very, very good at it. So
I have a follow-up question.
Sure.
And I have a lot about milk, but if you have unpasteurized cheese, are you looking at the same issue?
You're looking at the same issue. Yeah, you're looking at the same issue.
So that's been a debate, especially over the last 10 years in the United States, about the cost benefits of pasteurization.
It is a large debate.
Because the French think that, you know, by having unpasteurized things, one, it tastes better. Two, it passes on bacteria, which allows the body to build, you know, more resistance so we can fight off certain things that we're having trouble fighting off today in our society. We're too cleansed.
Right.
But on the other side, there's a handling issue, correct, with this unpasteurized
stuff. Well, there is a handling issue, and if you look back historically, before the pasteurization process became the norm.
In this country.
The death rate, particularly the the youth death rate was quite high as a result of drinking unpasteurized milk. So the pasteurization process decreased that markedly. And so the health benefits, most states don't, like I said, most states don't allow the sale of raw milk. Connecticut, where these incidents occurred, does allow the sale of raw milk. Those states have made that conscious decision. They've made a decision that it's because the process is never going to be perfect. The dairy process, as near as I can tell, is never going to be perfect. It's like any sort of tort defense idea, which is you can't protect everybody from everything all the time. The dairy process, and you maybe know more than me working on a dairy farm, but I think there's a lot you can do to prevent the spread of E. coli in the raw milk scenario, but you can't do everything, as near as I understand it. So,
well, when you're mass producing milk, the American way of manufacturing food, mass production, but pasteurization solves a lot of problems.
It does.
If you're not doing it, you really got to get down to the grassroots level of how it's being handled. Farm to farm,
precisely, and what
that I knew.
Yeah, well, good for you. I could have never touched a cow in my whole life.
But I assume, being in America, which mass produces food, they didn't want to get down to a grassroots farm to farm, monitoring basis. It's easier to just demand pasteurization.
I think that's probably the case because you're producing in such large quantities,
right?
And particularly to my clients, which are national supermarket chains. There's such a large production that's the reason why they did it. Yeah, I think that's probably the case.
So also, just to get back, that's a very interesting subject, and you talk about, obviously, your supermarket clients, but one of the areas that you also do a lot of work with and you're sort of a counselor in are premises liability.
Correct. I do a significant amount of premises liability work for retail stores.
Really have a specialty practice, don't you?
Well, I do and I don't. I'm a general. I've been a commercial litigator for 28 years. I have developed this sort of niche, I guess you would call it,
right?
Sort of by happenstance, which I think, frankly, is allow a lot of guys develop these
correct.
Sort of niche. They get a
sometimes
client.
That's how life goes.
That's how
correct.
Life goes, right?
Right.
So you get a client, and I did a couple of good jobs for the client, and then they were like, "Ooh, we're going to keep working with you because you kind of know what you're doing." And
right.
So then you start to be a student of the topic. So
right.
I'm a nerd, right? So I read these cases about premises liability. I read about the mode of operation approach. I actually read the smaller cases that affect all
that's
of these
boring.
Things. I'm sorry?
That's boring.
It's totally boring.
But it's exciting to somebody like
you. You got to do it. You
right.
know what I mean? And so then you try and educate your client as best you can before the accidents occur.
I was complimenting you by saying it's boring. Someone's got to learn that.
Somebody's got to learn it.
Someone's got to learn it.
The SJC is on top of it. Trust me.
Sure, it didn't get you right. dates when you were single.
No, it didn't get me any dates when I was single.
Right.
Trust me. Yeah, trust me.
But
much got me dates when I was single. Let me tell you that.
But the SJC, what's interesting, and just in terms of when you're focusing on an area, right, they have expectations of what you need to know.
Well, and that's correct. And the other problem is, there are different approaches to premises liability in different states. I am barred here in Massachusetts. I'm also barred in Connecticut.
Interesting.
And Connecticut, there's this thing called the mode of operation approach. And Connecticut interprets the mode of operation approach slightly different than Massachusetts. So I tried a case a couple of years ago where it was one of the first cases that used this thing called the mode of operation approach. Took a jury trial. We were successful. I have a trial coming up in August in the Federal District Court in Connecticut where one of the major issues is going to be the mode of operation approach. And they interpret it a little bit differently. So you kind of need to know,
right.
And some states don't even use it. So you have to at least be able to advise your client on it is a boring topic, admittedly, but the amount of people who slip and fall
is enormous.
So you need to be able to advise your client on that.
Right.
I mean, I always think everybody eventually slips and falls.
Well, everybody does.
No, I mean, because of old age.
Well, yeah, trust me. I just turned 53, and I'm starting to notice old age stuff. So that part hasn't happened yet, but I've already forgotten stuff.
That was the last thing my mother did was fall.
Yeah, and when they get to be that age and they fall, then that's a huge
right.
issue.
Right, eggshell plaintiff, right?
Right.
You take What'd you call that?
Would very good.
It?
Good for you.
Thank you.
You
say
take
it
him
again,
as you find
Mark.
Him.
Eggshell plaintiff.
Oh, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Yes.
The eggshell skull theory is if you have a plaintiff, and he gets hit in the head, and he happens to have very soft bones in his head, the proverbial eggshell skull, and another person would get hit with the same amount of force, would not suffer the same injuries as the person with the eggshell skull. As the defendant, you're stuck with those injuries that the eggshell skull guy has. Your argument can't be, gee, that guy happened to have an eggshell skull. You take the plaintiff as you find him.
Oh, that sounds like the NFL, the Welker theory.
Well, yeah, that's well.
Right.
Yeah, wow.
Well, yeah, that's.
And did you see concussion?
I did see concussion. As a matter of fact, my brother is a concussion specialist, so I was forced to see that. He has a concussion clinic in upstate New York, and so, yes, I did see that.
Another fun guy.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Well, you're just like, this family parties must be great.
Oh, yeah.
Steve, if anybody wants to get hold of you, and actually, without the joking aside, very interesting practice.
Very interesting.
Thank you very much.
Very interesting. I wish you'd come back again.
I would love to come back and chat with you guys and tell you more. About you know, as boring as some of these things are,
they're not.
You know, they happen every day.
You know, right. I had a concussion for 9 months. I had got hit by 2 18-wheelers on the Mass Pike.
Oh my God!
And I didn't have a seatbelt on, and I was the pinball. And I had a concussion for 9 straight months, and it was unbelievable to deal with.
Yes, it's a big deal. Right. And when people fall, you know,
I never knew that.
Really?
People slip and fall, and they suffer injuries.
About people I dated.
Can I stay around for that? Because I want to hear that.
It's a short story.
But when people slip and fall and get hurt, these are serious injuries.
Right.
And,
absolutely.
And the defendants, my clients view them seriously, and the plaintiffs view them seriously. And I know everybody talks about slipping and falling on banana peels and stuff, but they're very serious injuries.
Look at Taz over here, our producer. I mean, he's been hit on the head a lot.
I can tell, with respect.
So what's your contact information if someone wants to reach you?
My contact information is Dalton and Feingold. We're at 34 Essex Street in Andover. My direct dial is 978-455-2796. And my email address is sbazarian@dfllp.com.
You are very interesting.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm sure reading this stuff is not, but the result for the consumer is great.
Well, that's really, I represent the defendants, but their ultimate aim is for the consumer. All right, we want to make these places safe, and that's how what they try and do. And I know that sounds like the party line because I'm a defense counsel, but it's not. They try and do the right thing, and they try and make these places safe.
Metaphorically, they try to build walls.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah. Right. Right. They do, and they try to build one wall to keep everything out.
Right, and we're trying to keep it safe.
Right, so. I get it. It's interesting. I could have a lot of debates about it. I've heard the French story many times in my life, and I've also had French cheese unpasteurized. It's wonderful.
I have never had. I actually do understand the taste of unpasteurized milk is supposed to be dynamite.
It tastes like milk.
It tastes like when I was a kid.
No, it tastes like milk.
Right. Remember when you were a kid and we were still drinking pasteurized milk, but it came in glass bottles and you could taste the difference now.
Used to ride in my milkman's truck when he had a horse.
Oh, jeez.
I'm not that old, but still.
Well, I hear
you. I used to sit there sipping on chocolate milk every day, and I got to tell you, it doesn't taste the same.
No, I've heard that it doesn't.
Yeah. So. Well, great talking to you. I'd love to have you back again. This is Radio Entrepreneurs. There is no subject untouchable for me when it comes to entrepreneurship. I'll go into anything, and that's just my way. My name is Jeffrey Davis. I've been here with the fabulous Mark Z. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with more stories of entrepreneurship at O'Brien and Levine after these messages.